Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for October 3rd, 2018. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Ceretta. And joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film Weekend Editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
And writer Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
Okay, guys, we haven't talked about news since last week, so we have so much news to talk about. We have 5 days worth of news because, you know, Monday we had the water cooler and yesterday we heard all about the best movies of Fantastic Fest. So let's just dive in with a big story that hit today, that Disney is developing a live-action Lilo and Stitch movie. Chris, you wrote this up for the site. What do we know?
So Disney is, I guess, just going to remake literally every animated film they ever made. And the latest is now Lilo and Stitch, the 2002 animated film. The story doesn't clarify whether or not this is going to go to theaters or it's going to go right to the Disney streaming service, because Disney is developing films for both. I mean, they have like Dumbo and Aladdin are definitely going to theaters, but then they also have Lady and the Tramp and The Sword and the Stone, which are going direct to their streaming service. So it could go either way. I have a feeling this probably would end up in theaters because it sounds like a bigger name, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, and this is, I think, probably the first, you know, I could be wrong here, I'm speaking without doing this research, but most of the live-action Disney adaptations have been of, like, the Walt Disney classics. And this is the first that's kind of, like, not, like, one of those beloved fairy tale stories that they're trying to adapt. Well, I guess Lady and the Tramp isn't a fairy tale story either. But, you know, every time I go to Disneyland, the Stitch merchandise is like out of control. There's like, they sell so much merchandise based on that movie. It was only a matter of time before this was going to happen. I can imagine that Stitch will be like a CG creation and we'll have a young Hawaiian you know, star kind of, I almost picture kind of like, you know, am I being optimistic here, Chris? But I think if done right, this could be like a fun Moana live action kind of movie.
I guess. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, there's, the material is there to do something good. It's just, I don't know. I'm just getting like, this film was so recent. There's really no reason for Disney to remake it. I don't know why they're so hell bent on. I mean, I know why they want to make money, but it's getting a little tiresome that they're just remaking everything. But, you know, there's definitely the chance this could turn out well.
And the movie has such great style, has some good music, but it doesn't really have a strong story. Brad, do you have any connection with Lilo and Stitch? Or are you excited for a live-action remake?
You know, I really liked Lilo and Stitch when it came out. It's not one of my favorites or anything like that, but I think that it's pretty funny, and I can see where it has the potential for like maybe like an Amblin kind of style live action movie, because it has flares of E.T. and things like that. But it's also a little bit bigger and more cartoony than that, because, you know, there's the aliens who are trying to track down Stitch. So I wonder, you know, are those going to be, you know, fully CGI creations as well, or are they going to change up the story a bit so that's not part of it? It's definitely ripe with opportunity to turn into it, but I agree with Chris that it feels like it's too early to be starting to take those animated movies and doing live-action remakes of them.
Yeah. Speaking of aliens come to Earth, the first reviews for Venom have hit the web. Brad, you did a roundup for the site. What are people thinking of Venom?
You might be surprised to hear that we have a Best Picture contender in our midst. The symbiote is going for gold. Tom Hardy puts in a performance worthy of Daniel Day-Lewis. It's nothing short of Shakespearean, and it's a classic in the making. I think people are going to be really excited.
I don't think anybody is buying this.
No, people definitely aren't going to be buying tickets to this, that's for sure. In all seriousness, the word on the street is that this movie is pretty ding-dang-dong bad. It struggles with trying to be this very odd dark comedy and a comic book origin story. Despite even the people who have bad things to say about the movie, though, they keep saying how fascinating and mesmerizing Tom Hardy's performance is. Apparently, like, just the way he how kind of goofy he gets and the way he portrays going back and forth between Eddie and the voice of Venom is interesting. But otherwise, it's like the rest of it, apparently, some people are even making comparisons to comic book movies from the mid-2000s, movies like Daredevil and Catwoman and things like that. And so it just sounds so odd. And like, but it's one of those things too, where a lot of people are saying that it's, whether it's intentionally funny or not, they had a lot of fun watching it. So after reading a lot of these reviews, I'm kind of excited just to see it and just, you know, laugh at it, if anything, because, you know, maybe it'll be entertaining in that way.
Yeah, I saw the movie yesterday. I'll talk more about it in the water cooler next week. But I think it's probably the best bad movie of 2018 so far, at least. It is, listeners of this podcast know that I had like really low expectations for this movie. I had no interest in seeing it. I thought it was going to be horrible. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I'm not going to say it's a good movie because it isn't a good movie. It's a bad movie. My press screening, I want to say probably there was at least 24 laughs throughout the movie that I'm not 100% sure were intentional or intended to be laughs by the filmmakers. So it's that kind of movie. You can kind of enjoy it on that level. But yeah, it does feel like, you know, it feels like someone, you know, went back and, you know, made a movie in like the late 90s, like a Marvel movie before the Marvel Cinematic Universe existed and we knew how to make those kind of things. And it's pretty bad. But there's some compelling ideas there. Like, Tom Hardy, his performance is interesting, as you said, and the idea that you have a superhero kind of like kind of at odds with, like, you know, he's fighting it's a, kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing going on there, which is kind of a fun idea. But there's so many WTF moments in this movie. I almost recommend seeing it just because it's so weird.
Is it better or worse than The Mask?
You know, I don't have a love for The Mask as much as I loved Jim Carrey. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you there.
Well, but see, the fact that you can't say yes or no kind of tells me what we're in for.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, you know, if you have like a movie pass still, you know, if you have A-List, you might want to go see it. I'm sure A Star Is Born is probably way more worth your money.
Yes, you're not going to see Venom for like a couple weeks.
Or ever. Or maybe Sony will pay to have people go see Venom in MoviePass. Okay, let's move on. We have too much to talk about to concern ourselves with things like Venom. And let's move. Our next story has to do with Netflix acquiring the rights for Chronicles of Narnia, not only a reboot TV series, but movies? Chris, what do we know?
Hi there, Peter.
Oh my god.
Wow.
So Siri thought I said Siri when I said series. Okay, I'm leaving that in. Okay, Chris, what do we know?
Yes, so the Chronicles of Narnia, C.S. Lewis's fantasy epic series, for a while there it was going semi-strong as a film series, but it basically ran out of steam, and there was supposed to be a new entry directed by Joe Johnston, and that never got off the ground, and apparently it never will, because now the rights have gone to Netflix, who want to turn it into both TV series and also movies. So they're going all in, and this just seems to be the future of every streaming service. Everyone wants their own Game of Thrones. I mean, Amazon is shelling out all that money for Lord of the Rings, and now Netflix has Chronicles of Narnia. So there you have it. Everyone wants their own fantasy epic series.
See, I was never really that intrigued by the Narnia series. Brad, Chris, do either of you have a fondness for that franchise?
No, I like the first movie for what it was, which was basically Diet Kitty Lord of the Rings. But then after that, I really didn't care at all, because there were the third one was Voyage of the Dawn Treader. What was the second one? Prince something with the prince.
Prince Caspian.
Yeah, Prince Caspian. That's right.
Memorable film.
Yeah, I just didn't. It just stopped caring, and it was just wasn't something that I was interested in. Like, Harry Potter was already filling, you know, that void for me pretty well, and Lord of the Rings had also, you know, done fantasy on that level distinctly better. So it's just I don't care, and I'm not really that invested in seeing a new adaptation of it either, because I've never really had a fondness for the books either.
Yeah, I wonder if we're at an age level that. It's just like, you know, we were past it. Like, I wonder if, you know, someone 10, 15, 20 years younger than us have a nostalgia for the Narnia movies and are interested in this. But, you know, write us, peter@slashfilm.com, if you are that person. I'm curious. But let's move on to our next story, which is Jon Favreau's Star Wars TV series, which is coming to the Disney streaming service. Are you fucking kidding me?
I found something on the web about what is coming to the service.
This is stupid. Why? I love Apple, but why can't they get this right? Why? My Alexa doesn't go off like randomly throughout the day.
Mine does, actually. Whenever somebody, because I have mine set to say to respond to computer. Because I like to pretend I'm in like an 80s movie. Someone will say computer on TV, and then they'll be like, sorry, I haven't heard of that. It's like, damn it, Siri, or Alexa, whatever your name is.
Okay, anyways, the Star Wars TV show apparently might have episodes directed by Dave Filoni, who was the mastermind behind Star Wars Rebels in the Clone Wars. Brad, what do we know?
Yeah, so this is just a rumor for now, but Making Star Wars, who is pretty up to snuff on all things that are happening behind the scenes at Lucasfilm, they usually don't run with stuff unless they have like a good source on it and they're confident in it. But the stuff is unverified and unconfirmed so far, so take it with a grain of salt. But apparently, the first season of this live action Star Wars series will have several different directors taking on several episodes of the show. Three of them will be tackling two episodes, and then two of them will be tackling one episode each. And one of the directors that is tackling two episodes is supposed to be Dave Filoni. So this will be his live-action debut in Star Wars if it comes together. It's definitely an enticing prospect because it could be a test for whether or not he could tackle his own movie, which I think a lot of Star Wars fans would be excited to see, knowing how much they love what he did with Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. So it's an exciting prospect.
Yeah, I love what he did with Star Wars Rebels, and having the chance to, you know, attend the events of premieres and finales at and watching him speak about, you know, the filmmaking of those episodes. It just showed me that he's on the mastery of a filmmaker on the level of a lot of the live action film directors that I love. And he I think was on the set of Last Jedi shadowing Rian Johnson for a little bit, learning a bit about that world. So I would be excited to see some episodes from him on the animated series. There's also some rumors of casting from Game of Thrones.
Yes, potentially. Pedro Pascal, who you might remember from Game of Thrones or from Kingsman, The Golden Circle, he's rumored to apparently be in consideration for a role on the show. It doesn't seem like that we have any idea what kind of character he'll be playing or anything like that, since we don't really know anything about the Star Wars TV series. There have been rumors that it might deal with Mandalore, the people who are tied to Boba Fett and things like that. But otherwise, the only nuggets we've seen so far is there's a set that has been constructed, and they've seemingly have been either shooting or doing camera tests on. And it looks like the kind of set that you might see either on Tatooine or Jakku. So it's a kind of like desert, like village kind of scene, or like more, or not necessarily a village, but kind of like a small section of what could be like Mos Eisley Spaceport or something like that. So yeah, it's a rumor for now, so we'll see. But you know, it would fit. You know, he's a better known name from television, not a huge star. That's probably what the Star Wars series is going for, since the series is already going to be expensive enough because of visual effects, so they probably don't have a ton of money to spend on the biggest names for the series.
Yeah, and he's a star of streaming too with Narcos. I am surprised now that we know that they're shooting a lot of this TV series not at Pinewood in the UK, but in California, that they're actually like shooting on big stages. I was expecting for some reason, you know, Jon Favreau involved, and he's done all this like performance capture kind of stuff lately with Jungle Book and The Lion King. That to see, you know, these set visit or set videos come out of like kind of these large constructed sets. So that's kind of exciting for me at least. But let's move on to another bit of Star Wars news. And that is that the Last Jedi online backlash, there was a study done and they found out some interesting things about the backlash. Chris, what do we know?
So this researcher named Morton Bay did this very elaborate, very detailed study. And I won't even try and break down like the facts and figures for you because they're very detailed and some of them are even over my head.
And this is like a study that has been submitted to scientific publications, right? Or like
This is an academic paper. This wasn't like just for fun or, you know, this is like an academic paper. And through his studies, he's found out that a large portion of the very vocal, but, you know, not very vocal online backlash against The Last Jedi has been amplified by Russian trolls and bots. Now, let me say this here because I say it in the article too, but I have to say this here because I know people will take issue with this. This is not saying that everyone who dislikes The Last Jedi is a Russian troll. That's not what this is saying. I'm sure there are plenty of people with their own, what they find to be legitimate grievances against The Last Jedi. And while I don't agree with those, I know, you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. So please do not come for me on Twitter and say, oh, you're just saying, you know, I'm not, this is someone else's study. I'm not making this up.
Yeah, well, it also had some other stuff in there about not just the Russian trolls, but like politically motivated movements of tweets of like that the actual voices of people that actually did not like Last Jedi, like actual fans, was a lot smaller than percentage wise of all the, you know, social coverage.
Right. Yeah. The bottom line here is that while a lot of these people with their grievances against the film think they're in the majority, they're really not. It's really more of a small percentage. They're just very vocal about it. And there's also definitely a contingency who are very light, very right leaning, in that there are people who think, you know, Star Wars is too progressive, even though it really always has been, but for some reason they thought The Last Jedi was more progressive than other Star Wars films, and they took issue with that. Again, I'm not saying that's everyone. I know there are perfectly normal, sane people out there who just don't like The Last Jedi, and that's fine. But what this study shows is there's a very big majority of people who didn't like this film who are liking it for disingenuous reasons. And it's distressing to learn. You know, it sucks that this is what things have come to at this point. But, you know, I encourage you out there, listeners, to go to slashfilm.com, read what I wrote up of the study, and read the study itself. It's very, you know, I only scratched the surface in my write-up. There's a lot more in the study that you should read, and there's a link to the study in the story.
You know, Chris, when you publish an article like this, you know, and it goes out on the Slashfilm Twitter, I get all those people that are like angry and they're mad and they're like, I'm not a Russian troll, which is not what you're saying or I'm saying. But also it's weird to engage with these people because, like you said, they all believe that they are in the majority and that there really isn't that many people that like the movie. And, like, to try to have conversations with these people is weird because, like, you try to present evidence to them and they are only willing to look at their selective evidence. Like, they're like, look at this audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. And I was like, well, we've already seen, you know, people have studied that audience score. And, you know, the majority of those people that voted on the audience score are first-time users of Rotten Tomatoes that have opened up accounts, you know, right the day of that they voted. If you go to like IMDb, which has a large audience score or a large readership voting for that movie, it's like a 7.5 out of 10, which I'm not going to say is a rating of a great movie, but that's a very positive rating. Critically, it's done well. It's still, as of right now, the best-selling Blu-ray this year, above Black Panther. So I think if people didn't like the movie, why would they be buying the Blu-ray? Like, I just don't think this narrative just bothers me. Like, it's fine to dislike the movie. I even have problems with the movie. I've, you know, talked to Ryan Johnson about my problems with the movie. We've had public discussions on Twitter about it. I don't think it's a perfect movie. I know Chris is one of the people that thinks it's the best Star Wars movie. I disagree, but I like the movie a lot. And I do think there is a room to dislike the movie, but realize that you're not in the majority. That is just the vocal majority, which, you know, is consisting of some politically driven stuff and some bots. I think that's what you had to come to. I hope people listening to this podcast are not in that mindset, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's and on the same level, like, why does everyone even, not everyone, but why do these select people even care if they are, like, who cares if people don't agree with you? Like, it's just a weird way of approaching life. Like, if you don't like something, why do you need so many other people to not like it with you? And the same goes with liking something. If you like something, you really shouldn't give that much of a shit if everyone else likes it or not. Just like the things you like and dislike the things you like. That's really all it should boil down to. But
yeah,
I guess that's like impossible for some people these days, and I don't know why.
Well, I agree with you, Chris. There is a lot of investment because this is a franchise that people have followed all their lives, and they've, you know, not only invested a lot of time but probably money. Like, you know, you look around my home, it's like Star Wars statues, figures, posters, you know what I mean? So I can understand if they didn't like this movie, they might take it personally, but I agree with you. But anyways, we need to move on. We could talk about this all day, I think. The next story I wanted to talk about is something I wrote up for the site, that a George Carlin biopic will be scripted by one of the writers of Moneyball. No, not Aaron Sorkin or Steve Zaillian. It's actually this guy named Stan Chevron, who is credited for the story of Moneyball, a story credit on Moneyball. And it's unclear if this is going to be a feature film or going to be released theatrically or for streaming, or even if this could be a limited limited series.
I don't have the answer for 2018.
Just throw your phone away.
Just throw it away. I mean, I spent a lot of money on it. Yeah. Anyways, I am a big fan of George Carlin. I loved his comedy. He pushed the boundaries. He was a proponent for free speech. I don't really know much about him, his life story, to be honest with you, other than, like, you know, I watched all his comedy specials. I was always a fan. I would be interested in seeing a biopic from him, but it seems like this guy that they hired to write this, you know, to give you an example, after his Moneyball credit is kind of impressive. But then if you look at it, he followed that up with a 2013 film called Space Warriors, which no one really saw and it's getting really bad reviews. It just sounds like the George Carlin estate is trying to get some money and they're involved with this. But I'm hoping it's good. I would rather see, I think, the Netflix limited series version of this. Oh, good. She didn't hear me. then the theatrical feature film. Brad, I know you're a big comedy guy. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like you said, like, I wish there was somebody who was more of a relevant screenwriter and continued to work after their, you know, big successful screenplay was tackling it, because I feel like George Carlin deserves that. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, maybe it's something he's passionate enough about that he can do another a good job and write something as good as Moneyball was, even though I imagine, you know, that Aaron Sorkin had a lot to do with that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see it. Hopefully it doesn't turn out to be some, you know, cheesy made for TV level movie.
Yeah, George Carlin deserves better than that. But we got to speed ahead. We were already like way over our time here, but let's talk about Steven Spielberg's next film, West Side Story. It's a remake of West Side Story. They've cast the star of Baby Driver. Chris, tell us about it.
Yes, so Ansel Elgort, I guess that's how you say his name. And if it's not, I don't care, because it's a stupid name. no, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. But yeah, the star of Baby Driver is now going to play the male lead in Steven Spielberg's big West Side Story remake. Although they're calling it not so much a remake as they are another adaptation of the musical play. So this is the first real casting we've had of this film. Apparently Spielberg is going through rigorous casting sessions, and he's trying really hard to get this cast right. He's not been having the best luck. So this is the first name attached to the film, and I'm sure others will follow soon, because they have to start shooting sooner or later.
What do you think of him being cast? Like, do you think he's a good actor for this project?
I feel like Spielberg has this really weird thing now where he's like being drawn to these really bland guys. Like the guy in Ready Player One, was that Ty Sheridan? He's really boring. This guy is kind of boring. I mean, Baby Driver showed he's got, like, you know, I guess like dance moves, because there were, you know, there's that opening where he's walking down the street and he's dancing around. So I guess he'll do fine with that. But I mean, he spent most of Baby Driver kind of just like frowning and not saying stuff, so I can't really picture him as a good actor, but maybe, you know, I'll be proven wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not particularly excited about this bit of casting, but it is a Steven Spielberg film, and even though I'm not a huge West Side Story fan, I will say anything Spielberg. So we'll keep an eye on this and see who else he casts in this musical adaptation. But let's move on to our next story, which is some information about what Zack Snyder had planned for his version of the DCEU. Apparently, he wanted to kill Batman at some point. Of course. Brad, tell us about it.
Yeah, buckle up, bros. Batman was going to go down in Zack Snyder's planned vision of the entire DC Extended Universe. As we've learned in the aftermath of Batman vs. Superman and Justice League, Zack Snyder initially had a 5-movie plan for what he was going to do with DC Comics characters involved in these movies. And at some point along the way, he was going to kill off Batman. A Twitter user posted an image that looks like an icon of some sort, like a sticker that you might have gotten when you were checking in, like on Foursquare or something, of Superman holding Batman's limp body. And it said, you know, what we may have seen in the 5-story arc, with the obvious, you know, hashtag release the Snyder cut. And apparently he also posted this to Vero, which is for some reason Zack Snyder's social media outlet of choice, and apparently
he's friends with the creator of that service, so I think that's why. I think there might even be a money deal or something. I don't know, that's just my speculation, but there's
I don't care. But Zack Snyder apparently went out of his way to reply to this, and he merely said of course, confirming that at some point Batman would have died in this series. We don't know when, we don't know where, we don't know how or anything like that. I would imagine that maybe it might have happened during the 2-part Justice League series somewhere, you know. But I feel like it's a lot of death of superheroes in the DC Extended Universe, especially since, you know, the first we lose Superman at the end of Batman vs Superman. So I get exhausted when I read these kinds of things, but I also, there's a part of me that like wishes we really could have seen Zack Snyder's full on crazy wild vision for the DCEU and like without having it interrupted by the studio or anything like that, because I just wonder what it would have been like, whether I would have liked it or not. I just wish we could have seen it all play out somehow, because it seemed like he had this whole, you know, blueprint of where he wanted to go and what he was going to do, and you know, now it's even messier since they interrupted it. So I just wish they would have let it play out and then been like, okay, let's just, you know, reboot everything after this now. But there you go.
I kind of wonder, you know, didn't they make like a comic adaptation of Kevin Smith's Superman Lives script a few years back? Or am I, or maybe they're in the process of making that. I would be interested in seeing a comic adaptation of the quote unquote Snyder Cut and see where the DCEU would have went in his hands. I think that could be an interesting way to go of it, but I doubt that Zack Snyder is probably interested in that. It sounds like you know, his relationship with DC is probably not the greatest as of right now, possibly. So I don't think we're gonna see that, but I would love to see that version. Let's move on to our last and final story, and that is that Netflix is going to soon allow users to choose their own endings for certain shows. Chris, what do we know?
Yeah, Netflix has been testing this mostly with kids shows, where you know, you can use the, I guess, the remote to point and click certain things, but now they want to do it for adults, and they're going to test it out with an upcoming episode of the new season of Black Mirror, where you can decide how an episode ends. So there you have it. And they want to try it with other shows as well, but the Black Mirror episode is going to be the inaugural run for adult viewers. So if that's something you're into, you're going to get it soon.
Do we know any other shows other than Black Mirror that might employ this?
They're developing a Minecraft show, but that's going to be for, you know, younger viewers, but that's going to have it too. And then there's one other live action show for adults that they haven't actually named it yet, but it's going to have the same sort of interactive ability.
Now, I've always been compelled by the kind of choose your own adventure idea. Like, I used to read those books as a kid. I still have like a Wolverine, based on the Marvel Comics Wolverine character, book that's a choose your own adventure book. I do believe that, you know, drama and good storytelling is dependent on authorship of the entire story. And when you have users choosing their own directions of where it could take, I do think that you lose a bit in story. I've tried to argue this in the past because I'm, you know, an old grump who doesn't think stories in video games are as good as stories in movies for this one reason. I know a lot of people that play video games, you know, really disagree with my assessment there. But Brad, would you be interested in, you know, having branching storytelling in like a series on Netflix?
No, sir. I don't like it.
But you are a fan of video games.
I do love video games, but that's also like how that medium is supposed to be, because you're completely in control, you know, of your character and that kind of thing. Granted, you have a narrative that you have to follow, but you're in control of a lot more than you would be then in this choose your own adventure kind of thing. I just feel like my biggest complaint about this is that the ending of a story is an artistic choice. And I feel like giving people the opportunity to choose what ending they want takes away from the significance and meaning of that ending and how it, you know, impacts the characters and wraps up the story. And, you know, I'm sure that...
Well, I don't think that users are going to be able to choose the ending they want. They're going to choose a decision.
For sure. But at the same time, like, that feels like people are going to write a story where, oh, there could be these multiple endings, but we just don't want to pick one. And so we're going to let you do it. And I don't know. Part of me feels like it almost feels lazy in a way, because you're not making a definitive choice for your characters and for your story. And even though it's meant to be created in that fashion, I don't know. I just don't like it. Like when I watch TV shows and movies, I want there to be some you know, a direction that it's heading towards where I'm not the one who's guiding it, and I want there to, like, to be a definitive choice in how it ends.
Chris, I have a feeling that you are of the same mindset here.
Yeah, I'm right there. It's I don't really like this, and I hope it fails. So yeah, please don't do this, Netflix. Just
what about in the context of a Black Mirror episode? That sounds like it could be, you know, perfect. I mean,
yeah, I guess it could work on like a super meta level, but I don't want it. Just can we just not do this? Can we just not do anything we're doing right now? Let's shut everything down until we figure out what's going on. That's what I would like to know.
See, I wish like they would do this Black Mirror episode where it does have like not just a choose your ending, but a whole choose your own adventure kind of story. And I wish they would do it in a way that when you made the choice, there is no way to go back and rewatch the episode of TV without seeing it with your choices. So your choices have a permanence on Netflix, so that basically you can only experience that episode in the one way that you chose to experience it, except for I'm sure people would upload the other choices and stuff online illegally. But what do you think of that idea?
I definitely like that idea better just because it's, I don't know, that sounds a little more interesting, but yeah, I don't think it would even be possible to do that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Anyways, we have officially hit the wall here. We've hit the end of today's Slash Film Daily. Brad, where can people find more of your work online?
Slashfilm.com, Twitter at Ethan_Anderson, and my own podcast, Go Flix Yourself.
Chris, where can we find you online?
Also slashfilm.com and on Twitter at CEvangelista413.
You can find me at /film. You can find Siri on my phone. She likes to speak up every once in a while. And you can find all these stories on slashfilm.com and linked in the show notes. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns to peter@slashfilm.com and leave your name, general geographic location in case we mention the email on the air. Please go to our iTunes page, write us a very positive review. It helps us spread the word, tell your friends, and we will see you tomorrow. So wait, guys, you never read like Choose Your Own Adventure books at all when you were a kid?
No, I never did. I read Goosebumps. That was about it. And Stephen King.
I read a couple of Choose Your Own Adventure Goosebumps books, actually, but I was never like, you know, super into them or anything like that.
Yeah, they were always kind of a cheat anyways, because it was kind of like you made a decision that kind of like, if you made the decision that I think took you off the path that the author wanted you to go on, it eventually led back to that path. Does that make sense? Like, it wasn't like a branch, like a, if you imagine a tree and how it branches out, it was kind of like a straight line with loops that come off and then connect back to the, you know, the main thrust of the story, which I'm assuming is how they would have to do it on these shows. But I don't know.
No thanks.
America, we are endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.